Today I want to think about how we as individuals can help other people learn about God and come to their own faith in Jesus. And here's my main idea. It's a very simple idea that Christian behaviour promotes the gospel. Christian behaviour promotes the gospel. It's a very simple idea. How we act leaves an impression on others, and whether we're Christian or not, how we treat people affects them. And how we are treated affects us. If we get good service, for example, we think well of that company or that place. And if we get poor service, we think poorly of them and can get really annoyed. Let me give you an example of what I mean about making an impression. Last year, Ginny's sister and husband and two children came to visit us from the UK. One of the things they wanted to do while they were here in Australia was have a little holiday in Port Douglas. Just so happened that I had to fly up to Cairns about a month before they came to celebrate my mother's 80th birthday. And I thought while I was up in that part of far north Queensland, I'd go up to this place in Port Douglas to see if it was okay, because Ginny and I had actually done most of the booking for her sister and family, so we felt a degree of responsibility that this would be an okay place for them. Ginny had spoken to someone on the phone who sounded nice, so I was reasonably hopeful. Anyway, when I drove up to Port Douglas, I met the receptionist and told her who I was. She turned out not only to be the receptionist, but the owner-manager. She knew about the booking, and she was able to answer all my questions on my in-laws' behalf about what do you do with children? Where do you eat? What are the sightseeing possibilities, etc., etc.? How do you catch the bus from the airport? And everything looked lovely. She took me for a spontaneous tour around the place. It just looked great. And I came away feeling much relieved. And I came away in my head thinking, I would like to have a holiday there. Not just because the place looked lovely, but because of the positive impression of this lady. She'd made a very, very good impression on me. Now, if you're a Christian here today, part of what you're doing every day is creating, as Mavis said, impressions in other people's minds of what God is like. They may not know much about God, so you're the God-type person that they may know, and they take their cues from you. We can promote the gospel, that is, leave a positive impression about Jesus through our behaviour. People do, in fact, notice, and people are, in fact, helped to come to faith through the kindness and generosity of individual Christians. Let me give you a further example. When I was 23, footloose, fancy free, long time before getting married and having children, I was wandering around Europe for the best part of the year. Someone had told me in Ireland that there was a Christian community in Switzerland that I should go to. And this place was called L'Abri, which in English means shelter. This person said I should visit this Christian community because at that stage I wasn't a Christian, but I'd had lots of questions. Now, I wasn't sure what a Christian community was. I thought they might be a bunch of weirdos sitting up there in the mountains. They could be hippies. That might be a cult. I might go there and never be found again. You know, how would anyone back here in Australia know what had happened? I might have just disappeared into some sort of hole in the Swiss Alps. So it took me a while to think about this and decide, well, I could go for the weekend. Not too much could go wrong in Switzerland over a weekend, surely. So I was in southern Germany at the time in a city called Freiburg, and I managed to get a sort of organised hitchhike from Freiburg down to this Swiss city called Lausanne with a lady who was then driving on to Lyon in France. When I jumped out in Lausanne, I inadvertently left my passport and all my traveller's checks. Remember traveller's checks? I left all my traveller's checks in one of those travel wallets underneath her dashboard. And about 10 seconds after she drove off in the Lausanne traffic, I realised what I had done. And I now discovered I was in one of the most expensive cities or expensive countries in the world, with only about $80 Australian dollars in my back pocket, and no passport, and I didn't know what I was going to do. This Swiss, this Christian community was still a train trip and a bus trip up into the Dent du Midi, into the mountains. But you know, after about 30 seconds, the thought that I had in my mind, and I admit this publicly, I thought to myself, they're Christians. They'll look after me. Now, how crass is that? So I landed on their doorstep and told my sob story. I thought they'd just show me the door and think, here's another freeloading backpacker out for a free meal. But they didn't. They let me stay and they tried to help me. Now, it took 11 days to get my passport and traveller's checks back through the mail because, unbeknownst to me, there was a postal strike in France. This was the first time I had ever been in such a thing as a Christian community, and I think part of what God was doing was removing my means of escape. I actually had to stay put. I had no option. I couldn't go anywhere else. And it forced me to rely on these people. I was a fairly self-reliant person. I was travelling around Australia. I'd done a university degree. I knew how to get around places. I was now useless. So I needed their help. Over those 11 days, I discovered that these Christian people were actually very kind and generous, and they were also intelligent and articulate. After I got my things back, I actually made the free will decision to stay further, and I stayed another 3 weeks. I moved in with one of the families in Labrie, and I fully immersed myself in learning about Christianity, and because I'm perverse, I started arguing with them and trying to disprove Christianity, and they put up with me, and I look back and think, gosh, they were so patient with someone that they'd never met before and they'd probably never meet again. Now, although I didn't become a Christian, this experience was a significant stepping stone in my particular journey in coming to faith. These people's kindness and their willingness to let me into their homes, their patience in talking and listening and trying to answer my questions, all of those sorts of things helped me start to think, just maybe, maybe this stuff is true. Jesus put it this way in one of the Gospels, Matthew 5. He said, "Let your light shine before others so that they may see your deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So when Christians do good for others, when they're kind and generous to others, it's not as if they're trying to get accolades for themselves. They're not wanting the spotlight to come on themselves to say, "How good are you?" It's they want the spotlight to go on God. They want people to see through their good actions that maybe God is real and God is kind and God can be known by you, the person I'm trying to help. Some of us here at church have been reading a book called Promoting the Gospel by an Australian author named John Dixon. In that book, he tells the story about Tim Winton, and I've checked up on this story just to make sure it was true, and it can be corroborated on the ABC websites. Tim Winton is one of Australia's foremost and successful authors. His books include one like this called Shallows, which I read in the 80s, and Cloud Street, and then a more recent one, this one called Dirt Music, which not only won the Miles Franklin Award for Literature in 2002, but was shortlisted for the Booker Prize that year. He was interviewed some years ago by Andrew Denton on his ABC program, Enough Rope. And at one point, Andrew Denton asks Tim Winton about faith. Winton tells the story about his father, who was a motorcycle policeman and one day was knocked off his motorbike by a drunk driver, went through the wall of a factory and ended up in hospital in a coma for weeks because of the massive amount of internal injuries he suffered. And Winton says this, "I remember the day that they brought Dad home. He was sort of like an earlier version of my father. He was sort of recognisable, but not really my dad. Everything was busted up, and they put him in a chair and said, 'Here's your dad.' And I was horrified. And Mum had real difficulty because he was a big bloke. and she couldn't take him to bathe him. Even though he'd withered during the time he was in hospital, it was really difficult for her to lift him up and take him to the bathroom. And I remember one day this bloke showed up at the front door. He just banged on the door and said, "Oh, g'day, my name's Len. I heard your hubby's a bit crook. Anything I can do?" He just showed up and he used to carry my dad from the bed and put him in the bath, and he used to bathe him, which in the 60s in Perth, in the suburbs, was not the sort of thing you saw every day. It turned out this bloke, Len Thomas, was from a local church, and he'd heard that the old man was sick and he thought he'd come and help out. Winton goes on to say that this act of kindness by one Christian man made a deep impression on him. "It really touched me in that, regardless of theology or anything else, watching a grown man bother for nothing to show up and wash a sick man, you know, that really affected me." In another interview on ABC Radio some months later, he said that this act of kindness to his father began a spiritual journey which led both his mother and father eventually to become Christians and join a local church. Winton again says this, "I guess I had instinctively understood that something important had happened in their life, and it had a very practical human origin. Someone had been kind to my father, and someone had shown him a kind of sacrificial side of himself. And that had obviously impressed my parents, and it had changed their lives. And as a little boy, I was picking up on that." Now, what a great example of how Christian behaviour can promote the gospel. But please don't get me wrong. Giving someone a bath or a meal or a room for the night or whatever the act of kindness is, that in itself won't necessarily lead to someone becoming a Christian. Someone somewhere in this person's life will still have to explain the gospel, explain Christian truths about the sacrificial death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, about the love and mercy and goodness of God. Someone will still have to do that in ways that the person inquiring understands. But acts of kindness by and the godly behaviour of Christians can help others get a sense of God, maybe a feeling about God, an inkling about God. They're signposts to God. Friendliness, welcome, hospitality, all of those helped draw me towards God when I was 23. Len Thomas's care and kindness helped the whole Winton family come to faith. Christian behaviour promotes the gospel. And that's where the reading from Titus comes in, the reading that we just had earlier in the service. In that reading, the Apostle Paul is writing to a Christian leader called Titus, who is working on the island of Crete in the Mediterranean. This is in the first century after Jesus' death and resurrection. And the Christians on the island are starting to stand out as maybe not normal, maybe not the same as everybody else. For example, they don't go to the sacrifices which celebrate all the other pagan gods and goddesses. They don't attend the drunken orgies. And it's even rumoured that they don't swear allegiance to the emperor. The impression that they're creating is mixed, to say the least. Some people are finding them a nuisance. Some are wondering whether they're in fact cannibals because of this talk of them having a love feast, which we call communion. Others are wondering if these Christians will turn out to be traitors. So Paul tells Titus to teach the Christians how to behave in a godly way that will not only stop all these criticisms, but also will promote the gospel in the eyes of the watching world. And he gives teaching to five groups of people in the Christian community: the older men, the older women, the younger women, the younger men, and the slaves, those who work in those extended households of the ancient world. And it says this, so if you're in this category here this morning, you might take this to heart. Older men, I think I'm probably an older man, so you decide if you're an older man. Older men, you're not to get drunk or be grumpy. But on the contrary, you're to be models of faith and love and patient endurance. Patient endurance is the opposite of being grumpy, by the way. And that's how you'll win respect both in your family and in the public. Older women, likewise, you're not to get drunk. I think the drunken thing was tied with these drunken orgy type things. Older women, you're not to get drunk or be gossips, but you're to be role models for the younger women. Younger women, you're to love and obey your husbands and love your children. And in a world not unlike our own, where prostitution and sexual immorality was not uncommon, the younger women are to be models of virtue. Titus, who presumably is a younger man, is to be an example to the younger men who are to be self-controlled. Wouldn't it be lovely to have a whole bunch of young men around you who are self-controlled? And they are to do good with all that energy that's in them, to use that energy for good. Titus is to model for these young blokes integrity and uprightness. And then he says to the slaves who become Christians, you're not to run away. In fact, you're to stay and work hard, be good and honest workers, trustworthy and respectful of your masters. Now, what's the point of all this good behaviour? The point is that Christian behaviour promotes the gospel, and Paul makes this clear in three ways in this passage. Firstly, at verse 5, he says, if people who are Christians act like this, it silences those who want to malign the word of God. That is, it silences those people who want to say the Bible is untrue, or if not untrue, it's unhelpful. It silences that argument if people act in a good way as Christians who believe the Bible. Secondly, godly behaviour on the part of Christian leaders like Titus means that no one will have anything bad to say about such leaders. Verse 8, and if they do say something bad, they will feel ashamed because it will be proven that they're telling lies. Now, if only that was true all the time in the Christian community. But thirdly, and most strikingly, in verse 10, such Christian behaviour makes the teaching about God our Saviour attractive. Notice the word attractive. It's the ancient word that we get the word cosmetic from. In other words, Christian behaviour can beautify the gospel, can add to the innate attractiveness of the story about God's goodness and kindness. The good lives of believers can enhance the gospel's appeal. And that's a lovely idea, I think, that my behaviour, if it's good and godly, actually can beautify or enhance the message of the gospel in someone else's eyes. Let me tell you one last story. Some of you may know the name Christopher Hitchens, a British atheist living in America and one of the most trenchant critics of Christianity in the last 20 or 30 years. In fact, he's not only a critic of Christianity, he's a critic of any religious faith. He wrote a book called God Is Not Good. One of his sparring partners in America has been Francis Collins, who is the director of the National Institutes of Health and the lead researcher behind the Human Genome Project. It's Collins' work that's brought the Human Genome Project to the state that it's in a sort of conclusion, so that they can map the DNA of a whole person now. Now, Collins is also a Christian and has publicly debated with Hitchens on the truth or not of the Christian message. Last year, Hitchens was diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus with secondaries in his lymphs. And he said to people publicly, I've got the level 4 esophageal cancer and there isn't a level 5. His prognosis is not good. Now, some Christians might think it would be good to rid the world of such a trenchant critic of the faith. But Collins thought otherwise. And despite being sparring partners, he has offered Hitchens his medical help, his professional expertise, specifically using that expertise to get Hitchens' DNA mapped in the hope that some more specific targeted treatment might stop the cancer growing. Collins says this, the ability to match cancer drugs to the characteristics of an individual tumour is growing rapidly. So as I've done in other situations where a friend was in trouble, I reached out to Christopher and his wife Carol to offer assistance. They welcomed that possibility and we've met several times in their apartment. Over these last few months, we've not talked directly about faith. He knows that I am praying for him. Hitchens actually, in a little statement in another place, says, Francis Collins has never offered to pray for me and I've not criticised his reading of the Screwtape letters. So you get a sense that although they agree to disagree about God, they have a great friendship and respect. And Hitchens has described Collins as our most selfless Christian physician. Now, I don't expect Christopher Hitchens to become a Christian any day soon, but what a wonderful impression Francis Collins has made on him and his wife Carol, and is making not only on Hitchens, but on the many other atheists who take a lead from Hitchens. So it may be that you as a Christian may have some professional expertise that you can use to show goodness and kindness to somebody else. So there's the challenge that I leave you with. How might your behaviour enhance the gospel in someone else's eyes? You can't help everyone and you can't save the world, but it just may be possible that you can help one person, one more person that God is trying to reach. Ask God to show you what to do, how to do it, for whom to do it. And you will be promoting the gospel through your behaviour. Amen.